Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and our guest today is the most needlessly overeducated man in show business.
Oh, my goodness. What an introduction. That's very flattering.
Well, I mean, I mean that in the best possible way.
Okay.
Because we're talking to Dax Shepard. And Dax has just made a very enjoyable new movie of Chips, a sort of a reinvention of the old TV series that people know and love.
And we didn't know that you wrote and directed.
When you went there.
Yeah.
No, oh, really?
When we went in
it.
We went in to see it.
And I don't think I tell you up front either. I don't think I have a credit up front.
Oh, yes, it is.
Because
when we socked each other and went, oh, my God, did you know he wrote and directed it? I didn't.
Because we're fans of your earlier movie, Hit and Run.
Thank you so much. I don't think I'll ever be happier about a movie than Hit and Run.
Well, but that's what I love so much about it was reading the notes, the production notes that we press people, media people receive.
Yes. And you actually read them.
I do.
Oh, we
that
do.
That is impressive.
If we I like read them.
Because to be honest with you, they send them over to me for my approval. Yeah. I can't get through them. I made it through. This time I made it halfway through. I was like, well, that's wrong. And I was like, you know what? I have to hope that people will just go on what they saw on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the main thing that impressed me, besides enjoying the movie, was how you made it and how you cobbled together this movie through sheer will.
Hit and Run.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, totally.
And friendship.
Yes. I abused every relationship
would you
I had.
Which is what you have to do.
Yeah. You know what's... It's a double-edged sword. One is you are asking people to do you a favor, and film careers, especially acting film careers, are precarious at best. So you're asking them to trust you a lot, and certainly asking Bradley to be in the movie. I was like, is this ethical? I mean, we're really good friends, but is this like – but on the other side of that is we meet each other on sets, we fall in love, and then we just don't get to see each other much anymore. So – it's actually lovely when one of us has a project where we can actually pick who's in it because then you have this great excuse to hang out for a day or 2 days or 3 days. That happened in Chips a ton where it was like, Maya, I know this is way below you, but let's just spend the day together. And she'd be like, yeah, I'd love to spend the day.
Maya Rudolph, I don't want to give anything away, but Maya Rudolph has one hilarious scene in the new movie Chips. Suffice it to say.
Yes.
But there's so many good people. There's so many. And that's what I enjoyed.
Almost my whole family's in it.
It was.
Everyone that watches our kids is in it.
That's
true. I love just pulling from people I know that, like one of the bad guys in Chips with the huge red beard. He's just a friend of mine. He's not an actor, but he owns a CrossFit gym and he has this insane body and this great beard.
Oh,
and I'm
so
like,
funny.
And he can ride a motorcycle.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're in this. And when I watch it, I'm like, this guy's like an action star. So that part's really fun. And Hit and Run had my sister who had never been in a movie and my good friend Jess who had never been in the movie. They were the cop pair, the gay cop who's on Pouncer and then his partner. That was those two. And they had never been in a movie together. So to go from like a day where it's Bradley and Jason Bateman and then another day where it's people's first time and then you have to adjust dramatically your approach.
We should say Bradley Cooper.
Cooper. Did I just say Bradley?
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
It's because you're BFF. It's cool.
BC.
BC.
Yeah. Here's my global theory on this whole thing. Movies are very hard to make good. I've been in a bunch where everyone was working as hard as they could and their heart was in the right place. That doesn't mean they turned out well. So my theory going in is we don't know. I'm going to try really hard to make this great. But that's a little bit out of my control on some level. Mm. This experience then has to be the thing that we're all here for. Because if your life, at the end of your life, if you've got in your office 7 great posters versus 49 amazing months of your life, I would pick the latter. I certainly wouldn't prioritize, acclaim over my actual experience here on planet Earth. So I got derailed. That somehow is going to dovetail into Chips.
But no. Going back to Hit and Run just for another minute because I'm so interested in the movie. I really am.
Oh, great.
Because
it's my favorite thing to talk about, I think.
Because you had the idea.
Yes.
And the idea comes out of, I guess we have to go back a little further. The idea comes out of your lifelong love of and association with cars.
Yes. I'm from Detroit. Both parents worked in the automotive industry. I worked in the automotive industry for 14 years. I've raced almost everything. And I wanted to make the Sundance version of Smokey and the Bandit. Like, so I have this crazy love for all things automotive. And yet, as I was saying before we started this taping, that I'm also crazy interested in human development or therapy, those kind of things, self-improvement. So, yeah, I sandwiched together my wife and I's real life kind of story and a car chase movie. And, you know, I've said this many times, so it's not a secret, but I was a crazy addict for years. I got sober. I met her. I was maybe 3 years sober. She's a very good girl. Kristen Bell, we're talking about. Musical theater, did everything right. So I think her, like, hooking her train to mine took a real leap of faith, you know? Yeah. I think it was nerve-wracking for her to go, is this guy going to return to the version of himself he's told me about? And so the movie obviously is just a big metaphor for that whole real life experience we had. Because Charlie in the movie, the lead, he's in witness protection because he has committed a crime that resulted in someone getting killed, and he's kept that a secret from her, and she's come to know and fall in love with him. Then she finds it out, and then the whole movie is really will she let the past inform her future, or is she just going to just be with this guy?
Now, it's one thing to think up a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing and an impressive thing to actually write a screenplay that works.
Right. You know,
that,
yeah,
has
yeah,
a,
yeah.
that has a beginning, middle, and an end, and some interesting characters along the way and all of that. It's quite another thing to gather the necessary people to do it, to get the money, to get the backing, the financing. But then there's the actual shooting of the movie.
Yes.
And on many locations. It's an all-location movie.
Yeah. Almost entirely exterior.
Yeah.
All car chases.
Yeah.
Even our big breakup scenes are happening within a car chase, you know. and we made it for under $1 million. Like, it was in the can for, I think, $780, and then we had finishing costs. But if you said to me now, hey, good news, I got you another $1 million. You can make Hit and Run 2. I would say, well, you can't make that movie for $1 million. I was dumb enough to not know that, and that was my, like, secret weapon.
Sometimes that's a good thing.
It really, really is.
Yeah. So is Chips, which bears some passing superficial resemblance
to
Hit and Run, because it also has lots and lots of car chases.
And they're so good.
And they're so well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is Chips just Hit and Run for a lot more money?
Yeah, in essence.
That's the longer version of the tagline actually on the poster there.
Chips. Hit and Run times 25. I think I'm always looking for a project that will hold both comedy and motorsports action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, as you've well documented, you know, the marketplace, the film marketplace, has evolved so much because television's so good. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
You really need something to get people to leave their house for. And really, that thing seems to be intellectual property, some kind of known brand that they can't get on TV that they're willing to go out for, and a level of action that you still don't really get on television. So I was starting to look within the universe of, okay, well, let's find some kind of brand that people, you know, that a studio might feel like they had a safety net to make with me.
Yeah.
So in all truth, I would have made Fall Guy. I would have made Starsky and Hutch. I would have made any...
Somebody already did that badly.
So
Yeah.
Almost more of a challenge. Like, I watched Duke's Hazzard and I'm like, oh my God, I'd kill to have done a version I would want to see of that movie, you know? Yeah. So I wouldn't rule out me
convincing them. I was going to say, you still can.
No one will mind.
Always a new year, fresh slate, yes.
Yeah, so... I was just looking for anything that I could do, comedy, action, and then a love story, which is also what I like to tell. So in Hit and Run, it's it's my real-life wife, Kristen, and I. And then in this, Michael Pena and I fall in love. You know, it's very much
– oh, which is
it's Harry met Sally on motorcycles.
Really, I am such a huge fan of Michael Pena, and I have been for so long.
He's so
long.
Good. He's just so good.
He's annoyingly good.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is – part of what I got really excited about in seeing the two of you paired together is there's something that I look for in comedic actors, which is that you still have to like them, maybe even love them.
Yeah.
And so sometimes my husband and I love to go to the movies.
Yeah.
That is an activity.
You don't have kids, do you?
No, not yet.
Yeah. And see as many movies as you can right now.
Right? We're squeezing them in.
It's my favorite thing, too, and I haven't been in 4 years.
You're like, it's my favorite thing. I have children. Yeah. I have no life. So we love going to the movies, and one of the things that I feel when we come out, especially when we see a movie that is just meant to be enjoyable.
Right.
So it's my dad refers to them as January movies.
Uh-huh.
They'll be great for an airplane.
It's like a genre.
Yeah.
Early year releases.
January, right. February
so
movies.
So to see something as fun as yours this time of year has extra meaning.
Yeah.
Well, right. It's kind of like a palate cleanser of the Academy Awards season.
Yes.
Very well put.
You had some very – we keep adding taglines to your movie. This poster's going to be like 12 inches long.
The palate cleanser.
The 25 times
chips.
Hit
and it ain't
run.
No moonlight.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Oh. Chips, the anti-moonlight.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. But it is about men falling in love, so maybe it's not anti-moonlight.
It is. And it tackles the homophobia issue, it does. Which is one of my favorite
funny.
Things to discuss.
But this is – So something that I have always felt for you is that you have such a warmth and a kindness and a lovely way about you.
Thank you.
Because the thing is, I love your movies.
Thank you.
I watch them. Let's Go to Prison. I actually cannot tell you how many times I've
seen
it, because it used to be my getting ready for bed, like relaxing, because it just makes me happy movie.
Yeah.
And I really don't know how many times I've seen it. It's probably 100.
You know, and it's so nice to hear you say that, because being in movies is you know, you get your expectations really high, then they're often let down. And then slowly you can then fall in love all over again with the decision to make it. So a movie like Idiocracy.
So good.
At the time that did Idiocracy, I don't want to say I was straight out offered the role in Wedding Crashers, Bradley Cooper's role, but there was very strong interest in me. And I basically said, no, I want to do this Mike Judge movie, right? Mm-hmm. So I picked that movie. Well, 2 years later, when Wedding Crashers is the number one R-rated comedy of all time, and Idiocracy made a couple hundred thousand dollars, I was like, wow, I really chose wrong. But then to see it get this life of its own, and especially during the election, then Mike Judge and I were out screening at places for people, and to see
that film has, talk about staying power.
Idiocracy. So good.
Perhaps because it's all come true.
Yeah. That's definitely
it. It's trying to be a prescient movie. It doesn't hurt.
Directed by Nostradamus. it's just really cool. That is a very neat element of movies, is that you don't really know what kind of movie you're going to end up in over the course of time.
No. My dad always says that people don't set out to make bad movies,
right.
Which is
no
exactly what
you were just talking about.
Which, you know, so you put in, and a lot of times, too, that'll be part of his reviews for things, is it's not the fault of the actors.
Right.
It's not the fault of the editor, all these different, but it has to come together. It's a huge puzzle.
Yes.
So you don't know what you're going to get.
And there's a degree of magic involved that's often underestimated. Yeah. So, you like the love story with Michael and I like it a lot, too. Chemistry, you have it or you don't have it. It has no reflection of how you feel about that person in real life. It's just – it's this weird thing the camera sees or it doesn't see, and you don't know that. You can rehearse. It feels that way in rehearsal, but not until you're watching dailies do you go like, oh, my God, thank you so much.
It worked.
Thank you. We have that thing. Yeah.
I'm a people watcher in the least creepy way possible. And so I really enjoy – so going to see Chips, I was sat with my dad and my husband.
Uh-huh.
And I just kept looking at both of them, because that's part of what I really enjoy doing in a movie theater, is I like seeing how people are reacting.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
And so I've got my dad who's cracking up at some things that I'm going, oh, you just laughed at a dick joke.
That is brilliant. Yes.
You just thought that was hilarious. And then there's other things where I'm looking over and my husband is like crying laughing.
Oh, my God, that's so great.
And that was the thing, is some of the scenes, the naked scene, there's a naked scene with you and Michael Pena that I've seen. He's laughing now.
Don't give away too much.
I would never.
That's in the trailer.
But man, it's just, and I said to him yesterday, I said, the thing I love is that you guys seem to be actually laughing.
Right.
And that too brings me joy, is that you guys were enjoying it, I hope, as much as we were enjoying it.
Yeah, well, I had just been thrown into that wall with a ratchet an air ratchet, right? So they load this cannon up with a bazillion pounds of pressure, and then they pull a lever, and then I fly across the room in a harness and then hit the wall and drop into the tub, you know?
Oh, good.
And Michael definitely thought that was funny. That was – he really enjoyed watching that. But, yeah, we did have fun in that. And you know what's interesting is when you're acting in scenes that you're directing, you can't help but – as much as you can be into the scene, you're also having to make sure, like, he's saying the right things, I'm saying the right – you know, I'm the person in charge of that,
I've never
right?
understood how you do that. I mean, I know all the practical answers to that. You have video assist. You can all watch it on the video camera. You have a director of photography that you trust.
Right.
You have people around you that you put some faith in and say, does that play well? Is that all right? You
know, right.
I still don't get how you do that.
Yeah.
Because you – acting is – if I understand it correctly, I'm not an actor, is sort of losing yourself in the moment of the scene and being honest and truthful at that moment.
Yeah.
And directing is the opposite. It's being a micromanager.
Objective, yeah. Well, and I think of it as, you know, an actor's job is to be truthful about the moment you're trying to get, right? They shouldn't have a global sense of what's going on if it's going to work. That's the director's job, is to be tracking all these things in the macro. And the actor, hopefully, is very, very, you know, myopic about the thing he's trying to convey emotionally. What helps is that I write it. Like, I don't know that it'd be as easy if it wasn't my words. So I just know his dialogue right at the beginning of the day, and I know mine because it's so easy to memorize when you've written it.
Sure.
But I will say something happened in Parenthood, because I did that show for 6 years, and it was very loose. Like, you were very encouraged to improv and do whatever you wanted to do. And that experience doing that, you know, 100 and some hours of that show, I have a – like it's a binary opposition switch somewhere in my chest that I say something and I'm like, that's not how I would say that. It immediately feels right or wrong. It's like when you release a basketball to shoot it into a basketball. You know long before it gets there whether it's going in.
He's never played basketball.
You've never played – have you golfed?
No.
I don't golf either, but I understand the swing is the same thing.
I wouldn't use sports.
I accept the concept.
Right.
So continue.
So it is a visceral – for me, it's a very visceral reaction to whether that sounded truthful or not. And I certainly got to do that a ton on Parenthood just through – repetition of like just acting a ton. When you're on a show, you get to act all the time, all day long for 9 months a year, and it's a great it's really great. And I can just feel immediately whether something is in my tone or out of my tone, you know. And so I'm not even thinking about that. That'll just be a visceral emotional response I'll have immediately, whether I go, oh, we got it or we didn't get it. But again, I know his lines, so I'm making sure, because I didn't have a schedule long enough for me to run back to video playback every time. Many of those scenes I just shot and I knew we had it. And I would look at them and say, unless something happened tragically with the camera we set up, then we're moving on, you know.
Yeah.
But I will say, in a weird way, for me, it makes me a little bit better of an actor sometimes, because A, I work best when the director has confidence in me. I'm not the type that likes – and this varies actor to actor. On Parenthood, we had 14 cast members. Always it would divide the cast when the director was there. Like, what do you think of this new director? Oh, I hate him. He's like, oh, I love him.
So
you know?
Funny. Yeah.
My own personal thing is like I just like encouragement. I don't really – you know, I can feel when it's broken and I can get there. And I want you to at least extend me the courtesy of letting me try a few times and then let's talk about it, you know.
Yeah.
So the fact that I know no one's going to walk over and like lower my self-esteem is wonderful. That part I like. And then also because I have so many other things going on, I'm not trying to do anything. It kind of mellows me out in scenes, weirdly. And also I'm listening so carefully to him because I know it has to be said. I'm genuinely listening. So I don't know. Did that sound lofty?
No. There's a lot of pieces to it.
I don't want
to
set off the pretentious meter anywhere.
No, we have a gong.
Yeah.
Oh, you go.
Yeah. Oh, it's automatically triggered, so don't worry about a thing.
There's a new program. Yeah. Computer, yeah, yes. A new app.
We have a great algorithm that does it very, very well. Casting. Let's talk a little about casting.
Yeah.
Obviously, Michael Peña is your first choice because he's got to be your – your equal as a co-star, yeah. and the right guy has got to be Latino.
Yes.
And
unless we want to answer a lot of questions.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. And some people would have had, you know, the gumption to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have been run out of town on a rail.
Right.
But you chose one of the best actors working today, Michael Peña. So why not?
Yeah.
He's so damn good.
He's so damn good. And I'm sure we've all had similar experience in that. For me, first time I saw Crash, I was like, wow, that's a guy playing the gangster in a way I've never seen a guy play the gangster.
Yeah.
Like, there's a level of humanity to this. He resisted all the tempting cliche ways to go. And he's just a brave person, if nothing else. Like, mm-hmm. he went the other way with it. And I loved it. And then I had seen him in a lot of other small roles. But when I saw End of Watch, I was like, oh, wow, hold on a second. Oh, yeah. This guy's a legitimate yeah. movie star. Like, he has the X factor where you'd watch him walk down the street yeah. for five yes. minutes like De Niro. Like, he yeah. has that thing.
Yep. Yeah.
And from that moment, I was like, oh, he's a huge star and he will be at some point. I don't
yeah.
know, you know.
Yeah.
Then you see Ant-Man and he's so funny.
That's
yes,
the thing.
Yes.
He's so funny. And he does a lot of roles where he's playing – it's almost like a Cheech and Chong thing that he'll do.
Right.
But then you see him play dramatic and he's incredible.
Unstoppable. Yeah. So as far as casting and Chips, he was the integral piece of the puzzle, not me. I went into the studio with the idea of doing a Bad Boys version of Chips. That was basically my right. pitch. Like, uh-huh. instead of going the parody route, what if we took it serious and we tried to make Lethal Weapon or Bad Boys? I think right. because they're on motorcycles, it could hold that tone. They were like, great. Who would be Punch? I said, it'd have to be Michael Peña. They said, we love Michael Peña. That's a great idea. And the then president Silverman said to me, and you'll play John. And in all honesty, I had no illusions that they would let me be the lead of the movie. I was there to sell a script and then put my hat in the ring to direct. That's what I was hoping they would let me do, is write and direct that movie. And lucky for me, Greg Silverman said, no, you're John. You'll do all three. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I left the room having gotten way more than I was even searching for. But also, when I left the room, I was like, oh, my God, I just sold a movie that Michael Peña is attached to, star in, and I've never met him in my life. I didn't ask him if he likes Chips. It just happened on accident. And then, as luck would have it, my TV sister in Parenthood, Erica Christensen's really good friends with him, and I knew that. And I was like, you've got to send, like, an award-winning text telling him what a great person I am.
That's so funny.
And then we had a blind date breakfast at Cafe 101, and it went really well. And thank God he agreed to do it, because it's not the kind of movie he would do, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's very selective in a great, great way. And there was no script. There was just that, hey, Bad Boys Chips, what do you think? And lucky for me, he had some outs. He had some contractual outs for sure. Well, he had some script approval and stuff.
He wouldn't do Eric Estrada's hair.
No.
He wouldn't do the whole.
You know what's funny is we're on this tour, Peña and I, and it occurred to us, like, middle of the tour, like, you know, Eric Estrada was 25 when he played Ponch.
Yeah.
You know? So that's you know, Peña's 40. So yeah. There's just a whole – he could have never done the thing Eric Estrada did, even if he was setting out to do it. You know, it had to be its own, own thing.
So, all right, before we talk about some of the other actors that I love in your film, how do you choose your stunt coordinator?
Uh-huh.
And how do you choose all the people, all the team you're going to need to make all that happen?
Yes.
Because you did that on the fly in your first movie, and I know you've done a lot of your own driving and a lot of your own stunts.
Yeah. Yes,
and you shot here, which is a big deal because it doesn't happen very much anymore.
Yeah, and each of those things has a story behind it. So, my stunt coordinator on Hit and Run was Steve DeCastro, who's just a motorcycle riding friend of mine. Mm-hmm. We go to the track together. He's an amazing motorcycle rider, and he was a stuntman at that point. And so, when I did Hit and Run, I asked him to coordinate, and that was the first time he had ever coordinated. So he was doing that for the first time. Luckily, he's made such a great impact on all the really great coordinators in the business that when I told the studio, I have a coordinator, I want to use Steve DeCastro, and they're like, well, he's only done your one movie. All these guys went to bat for him. Like, they got more calls, you know, for him than they had ever gotten. So they let him do it. And he did such an amazing job that they've now asked him to coordinate a few different movies. So that's, like, a wonderful story.
That's great.
And I sent him up in the helicopter a couple times to shoot some aerial stuff. And now he's in the DGA. It's all wonderful. It's, like, the best. And then as far as my DP for this, My only – all my stress going into this was about action. I'm not worried at all about getting the scenes to be funny. That's easy. I was just like, how do I do a tracking shot of a motorcycle up a staircase? Like, what am I going to build to do that? Or what am I – you know, there were just so many things I had written that that needed some solving. And I met with some different DPs, and I picked Mitch Amundsen, who shot the movie, primarily because he shot – he was the second unit DP on – every Michael Bay movie, on the the guy loses his mind, Matt Damon, Born Identity. Yeah, so he's shot he had DP'd more action movies than anyone I'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I hired him solely on that because I knew I was going to need help in that area. And the first time I saw his genius was we have this amazing piece of equipment which is a Porsche Cayenne with a huge Russian arm on it, right, that goes 360 and booms up and down and telescopes.
Let's just explain a little bit.
Oh, okay, great.
Russian arm.
Yes. So
this is not a reference to our president or anything.
No.
Explain in movie terms a Russian arm, please.
So what they do is they mount on the roof of the vehicle a turret. And the turret can swing 360 degrees. And on that, they put a large, basically crane, if you can imagine a crane. And that crane can go up and down. And then on the end of that crane, it also has a head that allows it to pan left or right, tilt up and down, and push in and out. And they can drive that Porsche Cayenne at like Formula One speeds. And then Mitch sits in back with these joysticks, and he operates the crane, which is fun in and of itself because the crane weighs a lot. And so as he swings it left and right over the car, it affects the suspension. And the guy driving the car also deserves mentioning, Mike Macheski, won the Baja 1000 3 years in a row. So you've got the single best guy driving the car. You have the single best guy to operate the crane and the camera. And then I'm in back with a monitor, and it exceeds any roller coaster ride you've ever been on in your life because, there is
– except you could die.
Exactly. That's what makes it so great. But and then what amplifies that experience even more is that I'm looking at a big monitor. Well, if they're on a long lens, right, what we're seeing is actually quite a bit ahead of the car. So we're coming up on things, and I'm like, I'm bracing for impact because what I see is that we're hitting something because the lens we're on. And it was just the most – as you can see, I really enjoyed that kind of thing. And then for California, what's interesting about that is, again, we had our super modest budget. We definitely were going to have to go somewhere with a tax rebate. That was a given. And the way the California tax rebate works is it's basically a jobs ratio bill, right? So our jobs ratio number out of three, and you're trying to get close to three as possible. You're applying with every single movie that's going to be shot from all the different studios.
Yeah, it's kind of a lottery system too, isn't it?
Well, there is a lottery version, and the TV incentive is a lottery. And then there's also a lottery portion for low-budget movies.
Okay.
But for the big expensive studio films, it's just a jobs ratio number.
Okay. How many people are you going to put to work?
Exactly. And in certain departments are weighted differently, which is interesting. Certain areas, like, so if we were to film outside of the zone is an area of 40 miles, I think, out concentrically from the studios. And anything outside of that, you pay different rates for different things. So we had to have 20 days outside of the zone to get that number up. So we actually engineered the entire shoot around getting our number high, which I don't think – that's a very rare thing to do. Design your movie around that.
Yeah.
And actually I had to adjust like on the fly and prep. Like we still need to get out of the zone four more days. Like where are you going to shoot this scene now because it can't be there? It's like, okay, well, I'm not willing to go to Louisiana, which was the backup plan.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll have to make this work. And there's ways to finagle it as well. It's like if you start your day out of the zone and come in at some point. So there's all this stuff. But, it's a huge matrix to get to win this thing. And we did. We found out right before we would have had to go to Louisiana that we had gotten the incentive, and that kept us in California.
But that's a win-win all around. We say this, Jesse and I, as residents of California.
Yeah.
Who would like to see the movie industry remain here as much as it can.
Yes.
Movie and TV.
Yeah.
And runaway production is just a reality. And when you're a producer and Louisiana or New Mexico are offering you 30, 35, or Georgia –
30-35% Or England.
Rebate.
They give you an incentive on the actors' paychecks and the actors' gross participation. Like, how can anyone compete with that?
Yeah.
A superhero movie, if you're hiring Robert Downey Jr., they're going to pay a third of his. Nuts.
Yeah.
Yep.
But if ever there were a movie that needed to be shot here, though, I kept saying to the studio, I'm like, guys, California's in the title. Like,
right.
It's not Lips. It's not Louisiana Highway Patrol. It's Chips. I feel like we really need to do it here. Mm-hmm. And we just got lucky as we continued to get lucky throughout the whole shoot. It was like I've never felt more blessed. It was during El Nino. It was supposed to rain nonstop. We were shooting in winter. Mm-hmm. It only rained on our days off for like 8 weeks in a row. It rained on our days off.
Wow.
When no one ever got hurt. There's like a trillion motorcycle stunts and no one got hurt. Yeah. A lot of great stuff.
Well, you got to cast your wife as a slut.
You know, I didn't cast her as that. when you write a role for an asshole, the last person you think of is Kristen Bell. At least the last person I think of. And so I had no intention of hiring her to play my wife, but she read it and just liked it a lot. And she said, I really want to play Karen. And I'm like, honey, you're just innately likable, and this person has to be unlikable. And she goes, that's great. I'm playing Karen. And I go, okay, you're playing Karen. So she basically said, I'm doing this movie.
And see, what I noticed that they're not allowed to notice is that her
boobs
looked massive.
Yes.
See, we can both say that.
Yeah, yeah. They can say it too.
Okay.
I'm very comfortable.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that, honestly, like the first thing I thought was
that too
was
has a story.
She's so tan.
Yeah.
She's so tan. She's got this incredibly ridiculous long hair and just these crazy boobs.
Well, my character was an X Games star, right?
Yes.
A motocross guy.
Yes.
And so she felt like that person would marry a trophy wife, and that trophy wife should have gigantic boobs and spray tans. So she did all those things, and how she did that was she was breastfeeding at the time, and she would normally pump every 2.5-3 hours, and she didn't pump for like 20 hours.
Oh,
I was legitimately nervous
that
they were
going to
rip.
Yeah.
Normally at this point, I'd be saying TMI. But we're talking about the making of a motion picture.
Yes. Oh,
yes.
Serious stuff. Yeah.
This is more of a logistical
kind
of conversation.
You know, people talk about being method.
Mm-hmm.
That's intense.
Yeah.
That is intense. I will not feed that baby.
Would have approved,
I couldn't even, like,
You couldn't enjoy the boobs being massive. You were too worried.
Well, I was nervous that there was going to be, some kind of damage. it looked very painful to me.
Oh, God.
Yeah. All right. I don't want to give something away that I shouldn't give away.
We're very
I bet it's in the trailer.
it probably, everything is these days.
Everything is. Yeah.
But that's why I don't watch trailers.
You don't watch trailers.
Oh, no, I won't.
Oh, really?
No. I won't do it because I don't want to see all that stuff.
I feel the same way. If it's a movie that I'm very excited to see and I know about already, like I know about Dunkirk and I worship Nolan, right?
Uh-huh.
So I don't want to see anything, but I already know about it. I guess this is your life, so you know about everything coming out. If I don't see a trailer, I'm likely to not know the movie exists.
Well, I'm trying. I'm making a concerted effort.
He bubbles himself.
Not to read about it.
Uh-huh.
To close off my ears and my awareness and my radar.
Yeah.
To see the film as cold and as fresh as possible, which is how we saw Chips.
Right.
We didn't even know you'd made it. We knew you were in it.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
But I love it because seeing it that way with a clean slate is the best way to see them.
I can tell you some of my favorite experiences at the movies have been, I go to see one movie, it's sold out. But I'm there and I see something.
See something else.
What was that amazing Jeff Bridges movie about him being a singer?
Crazy Heart.
Crazy Heart.
Yeah.
No clue what that was.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to see like a teen coming of age movie or something, right? That thing starts and right when he's in his Suburban, he's got the pee cup and then he helps the window up. I'm like, I'm seeing something so special.
Yeah.
And I've seen a few like that, and that is the most exhilarating
seeing
movie.
Seeing Jeff Bridges in anything is special.
Yeah.
Yes, he is. Oh, my God.
He's a treasure. He really is. You know who else I think is an unsung treasure? Isaiah Whitlock, Jr.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely.
He's so good.
Oh.
And he's so perfect in your movie.
He is.
And if you folks don't know who I'm talking about, just Google him or go on IMDb. You'll see his face. You can say, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
If you've watched The Wire, he's the one that says, shit, partner. He had a catchphrase, the extended shit. Yeah, his voice, his delivery, his presence. I don't think I've ever had more fun directing an actor than him because he can say any set of words together and it'll make sense.
Yeah.
He can get away with murder. So I was just yelling out the most perverted stuff for him to say. And he would just say in that voice, and I'm like, yep, I buy it.
Yep,
I still buy
fine.
It. I'm still in.
The thing is that, and again, this is not giving anything away, but he plays your boss. Or he plays Michael Pena's boss.
Yeah.
And that kind of role, that hard-ass boss role.
Yes.
Can be such a cliche.
Yes.
It could be so tired and you could phone it in. A lot of actors would and could and get away with it. Even.
Yeah, yeah.
But not him.
Yeah.
I mean, you gave him great words to say, but he's just so good.
He is so good. And, yeah, you know, I very much want to embrace all the different archetypes in this type of buddy cop movie. You know, I want to embrace – I want to give you what you expect – but then my goal every time was to make a left turn within the scene you're used to seeing, you know.
Yeah.
So I still want there to be the boss who's going to eventually fire him. Like, I want that.
Yeah.
But I want it to be on a different, new, original level. All so right. I'm not afraid of the construct. I just really hope to always, you know.
All right. Let's spin the wheel a couple of times and go backwards now. You grew up all around cars.
Mm-hmm.
Loved cars, loved racing, all that. So we've established that. What about movies? What movies turned you on when you were young? What movies inspired you?
Mm-hmm.
What movies, if any, because you went to school and studied anthropology at UCLA, so you did not follow a movie-making track initially.
No.
Or even a
probably
performance track.
Probably would have saved me a lot of time had I done that.
what inspired you to want to even do this?
Okay, well, I can kind of say the more profound experiences. One is Smoking the Bandit comes out in 77. I'm 2 years old, but it plays a lot. And I probably have seen that movie more than any other movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that movie – in fact, I think Burt Reynolds ended up almost sinking his own career because he got resentful about this.
Yeah.
But he had an interview in Playboy in, I think, 1979 or 80. And he was lamenting that Dustin Hoffman always wins the Oscar, but Dustin Hoffman's given this amazing script. He goes, I think there's something to be said for the fact that I made Smoking the Bandit with a 20-page outline. And I do think there's something to be said for that. Like that movie, which was the biggest movie of the year, or second biggest, right, behind Jaws or something.
Yep.
The fact that he won it, you know, like he winged it, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
And he knew how to cast, like you're saying. He thought, well, I don't have a great script, but if someone plays Buford T. Justice perfectly, we've got something. And then I just also love like Hal Needham's old-fashioned, you know, stuntman turned director. There's something there that's great. Anyways, that movie for me was like – that made me fall in love with movies. And then I would say on the comedy front, Fletch is up there. The first movie where I was aware of filmmaking maybe is Raising Arizona.
Mm.
Like the sequence where he steals the Huggies, that huge set piece, and he flies through the windshield of the pickup truck, and then all of a sudden it's handheld and they're chasing the dogs through the house. Like that was the first time I started going, oh, there's some pretty specific decisions being made, and that's making this funny. Like none of this on its own on paper is particularly funny, but the way they shot this and in fact, I went back to it for the fight scene in the house in Chips with the painting over the head and everything. I rewatched the fight scene in the trailer with H.I. and John Goodman and everything. I watched it like 36 times just thinking like, what did they do in this scene to make it that cartoony?
That's the film where the Coen brothers were working with Barry Sonnenfeld, who since became a director, of course, but was their director of photography. And they said, it's too smooth. It looks too perfect.
Uh-huh.
And they said, okay. And he started loosening screws and bolts in the camera rig and created what they called the shaky cam.
Uh-huh.
So that Raising Arizona looks the way it does in part because they wanted it to look that way.
Yes, yes.
And give it a little more kinetic energy somehow.
Yeah.
And it paid off.
There's this great, if you have any interest at all in learning about lenses or how or why things are shot, if you can get your hands on the what was their gangster movie they made, too, after that? Miller's Crossing. If you get the Miller's Crossing DVD, there is an extra, and it's Barry Sonnenfeld talking about lenses and what use they serve and why they shot Miller's Crossing on long lenses versus why they shot, I think, the entire movie they shot on an 18 or something. I don't know. Right. For Raising Arizona. But he gives a really simple explanation of how and why you shoot with the lenses you shoot. And I was very grateful I happened to see that like 10 years ago so I could wrap my head around that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, that movie was just hugely impactful. Also, as an actor, it was, because here was this guy who I loved. I'm so bad with names. I mean, this is my favorite actor. But the star, H.I. McDonough, the actor. Nicolas Cage. So Nicolas Cage kind of makes me think, here's an average-looking guy. He's not like a movie star good-looking guy. Yeah. He's not a comedic franchise like Bill Murray. He's just offbeat, and he's okay-looking. And I just latched onto that of like, wait, maybe I could do this thing. You know, I don't look like those guys. I'm not Will Ferrell, but maybe there's, you know, that seemed like something that was obtainable to me.
But that's a really interesting observation. Yeah. Very interesting. So what led you to study anthropology?
So my mother was willing to pay my rent in Los Angeles if I was a full-time student. And so it didn't really – I knew I was here to do comedy, and so I had no illusion of getting like an accounting degree or anything. So I was really free to just study anything that interested me. And I took very early on an intro to anthropology class that is now like – it brainwashed me. They introduce you to this this concept of cultural relativity, right, where you reserve judgment until you've actually investigated and found out why people do something. You're not interested in labeling something evil or labeling this culture as primitive or anything. You're just interested in finding out why they do what they do. And that weirdly ended up kind of informing how I write, how I do everything, how I act. But I loved primates. That was to study primates, you had to study anthropology. And then I took a bazillion primatology classes. And I just learned about stuff I was interested in.
Primatology?
Yeah.
Which is my new favorite
studying
word.
Primates.
Yeah.
Which we are among them. So, yeah, I just did what interested me. But I'll tell you this. Once I finished all my core classes at UCLA to have my degree, I had to just burn through some credits and I was free to take electives. And then I took a film history class and, you know, they were showing nitrate prints, which they have one of the only nitro booths in the country.
Melnitz Theater, James Bridges Theater.
Yeah. UCLA. So I had never seen Citizen Kane and then I got to see it on a nitro print. So I never
the best way possible.
Yeah. And then I took a screenwriting class. And while I was doing that, I was like, wait a minute. I could have been learning this the whole time. Like, I was so much more on fire for that. It felt like a cop-out to go major in that. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, others have copped out, as you know.
Yeah. But the primates would miss
you. But you got here.
I got here. Yeah. And I have a worldview that was shaped by that I like.
And then what drew you to the Groundlings?
Well, in all truth, I left Detroit. I wanted to do stand-up desperately, and I was too afraid to do it in Detroit. I was just scared. And I thought, if I move all the way across the country, I will have to do it. But then I got here, and I still did not want to do it. And Groundlings, to me, seemed like a softer option because it was improv. You weren't by yourself. You could share the failure with another person or two.
Right. Yeah, it's safer if you're new to it.
And so a friend of mine who I knew out here who was, in my mind, was like a comic god. He was in the third level of the Groundlings and he had done stand-up, and I said, what should I do? He said, go audition for the Groundlings, and I did, and then I started that program, and I was doing that at the same time I was going to UCLA. I was kind of going through their program. It takes years to eventually get in the company, and I did that, and then that led to me getting punked, which then led to me being able to do movies.
And here we are.
Yeah.
And here we are.
But that's a really interesting path.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. Well, back to Chris and I being so different, the thing I always say that's fascinating about us, and I try to remember it as a parent, is she did everything right, you know? She left high school, went to NYU for musical theater. She had to drop out because she was already on Broadway. You know, she did everything right. And I had a ton of problems and was an addict and did all kinds of stuff. It took me 10 years to get an acting job. And we live in the same house. We sleep in the same bed. We make the same amount of money. And we own the same two children. So I'm like, look how different of paths you can take and end up literally bullseyed in the same spot.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to hold on to that when my kid tells me they're not going to college or something. You're like, well, you might end up exactly where someone else is.
Well, it's true. I mean, you know, Woody Allen dropped out of NYU. There's so many examples of, you know, through history.
Or
recent
Tarantino
and modern.
Working at a
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I think now, too, more than ever, you can make a feature film if you're inclined for
next to nothing. You can do it on your iPhone. Yeah.
You really can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's certainly way, way easier now to create things and edit things and do all that.
Yeah, I mean, I have friends who, if they had had access, even I, maybe, if I had access to the technology that is commonplace today, my life might be completely different. And a lot of friends of mine, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's still changing, and it's still evolving.
Even the role of a writer, like your role that you had as a reviewer and as a writer, the amount of outlets were so few, and you staked a claim, and, you know, now everyone reviews, everyone writes.
Oh, everyone's a critic. Well,
the whole thing's been watered down. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's scary, but I'm sure, you know.
But that's it. People say to him all the time, how do I do what you do?
Right.
And I'm the one that immediately answers.
You'd be born in 1950.
You can't.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I say you can't. Nobody can have the progression that he had now because it doesn't exist.
That's right.
Because the whole thing is he was the overachiever. He was the kid that made the phone calls and sent letters and things like that.
Yeah.
There were still, I one of my favorite things that he was able to do was he looked up Rube Goldberg in the phone book.
No kidding. The man who made the weird machines?
Yeah.
That Rube Goldberg?
That Rube Goldberg.
Okay.
The one who's in the dictionary.
Yes, the guy
whose name is in the dictionary because it's so associated with contraption.
Overly complicated devices to perform.
I looked in the Manhattan phone directory and there were two Ruben Goldbergs. One of them had to be him, and I was right. One of them was, and he invited me at age 14 or 15 to come and meet him.
Really?
Which I gladly and memorably did.
Yeah.
He has a ton of these kinds of stories.
Sure.
That you go, well, no, today, if I got a hold of you, if I called your home, you'd go,
I would be upset.
I will find you.
Yes.
I will kill you.
Yeah. I'd say, let's meet at Cafe 101, and then I would send someone there.
Right, and then you send Michael Pena instead as my blind date to kill me in the night.
Yeah.
Something that I loved in Chips, there's a moment where you make a very, very funny paparazzi joke.
Yes.
And it made me laugh for a specific reason. I know that you and your wife are dedicated to keeping kids out of the press. Not just your kids, though.
Right.
Kids.
Yes.
That it should not be anyone's right.
Show business.
Yeah. It should not be anyone's right to take their photo.
Yeah.
That's it. But I loved that. And when it ended, that was one of the first things I said to my dad because I'd mentioned it to him before.
Yeah.
When I'd first seen you guys do interviews, and you've been to Washington, right? Like you've really
we've argued paparazzis on TV, or I should say, we've debated them. You know, it's a fascinating thing to tackle because first and foremost, I believe in the First Amendment, so I do believe that they have a right to do what they do, as much as I detest it. And we could argue all day long over what's news and what's not news, and whether they should be protected or not, but. Minimally, I realized there will never be a legal solution to this. So we had gone to a very famous actor's house, and they had gotten a bill passed in California that they were going to start prosecuting the photographers who harass kids.
Yes.
And we went to this thing, and it was very well-intentioned, and people worked really, really hard to get this bill passed. But I was sitting there going, this is not going to stand up in court. There's just no way this is going to stand up in court. And I thought the better way to approach this is – my wife knows within 17 seconds of when they discover a new healthy food. My wife knows about it, as do all mothers. The information that travels along the mother's superhighway
is so fast.
It's so fast. It's crazy. And I thought to myself, I don't believe mothers know how the photos they enjoy are taken. I just don't think they realize, because how could they realize that? All they see is a really cute kid, and I like looking at little cute kids as well. So we just thought if we could just get the message out there of, like, just so you know, when you see that picture, they've knocked over five other kids. They're waiting at the end of your driveway. Yeah. They're wearing fatigues. There's 18 of them. And it's terrifying, and that's, you know. And so my wife, smartly, I had written something for the Huffington Post, kind of getting it out there, and then that led to us debating people. But my wife, better than what I could do, is she went and met with the editors of all these magazines that buy this stuff, and she met with all the photo houses that buy this stuff, and she got them to voluntarily adopt this thing called No Kids Policy. And Now there is not a market for it because none of the outlets will buy it. So they've really stopped. We've gotten letters from people
that's
we've never. It is. I didn't think.
That
listen,
is absolutely extraordinary.
I didn't think we would get any momentum whatsoever. I just felt like I had to fight because I love my kids and it was. I didn't think it was
and
right.
And you were smart enough to send your wife to do this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. She is the. Yes, she is the best bearer of bad news. But. Yeah, we get letters from people we've never met that are actors whose kids won't leave the house because of that. That have written us these letters like, you gave my kid their childhood back. And we're like, oh, my God, this is amazing. And for the – I mean, knock on wood, we have not had a problem since we started this thing. So we've gone like 4 years now without them following us anymore.
Wow. That's just fantastic.
It is.
And as someone who – I love kids.
Yeah.
I love kids. I look like a cartoon. They love me. I love them.
Yes.
I definitely am one of those people where before I'd ever seen it happen,
yeah,
I thought, oh, God, they're adorable.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's one thing to take your kid onto a red carpet,
yeah,
which you should absolutely be able to do.
Right.
You should absolutely be able to bring them to the premiere of Zootopia or whatever it is and enjoy it with them.
Yeah.
That's completely okay.
Yes.
But then I also think how lucky I am that when I was with my dad anywhere, I first realized this, I think I was 12 or 13, and I grew up here, and so some of the kids I went to school with were having paparazzi problems.
Uh-huh.
And I started to realize, I'm so lucky that my dad's not that kind of famous.
Right.
That my dad...
Not scandalous famous?
I call it nerd famous. That's my name for him, is nerd famous. Because I would get annoyed enough when someone would come over to the table. If we'd be eating dinner and someone, and I was like, you know, 8 or 9, somebody comes over to the table and wants to talk to my dad. They go, that's my dad. You can't have him.
That's right.
As
it's
mine.
Your time.
As mine. No, no. And they were lovely. And now now I'm so appreciative of it.
Sure.
I want everybody to tell him how much they love him.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know, come on over. But as a kid, you do. You're like, but that's mine.
That's right, yeah.
And
it is, by the way. It is yours. And that's, it's that's a very finite little amount of time, that little bubble that you get that.
Yeah.
And you should get that. That's my stance on it anyways.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so at any rate, I've had this long kind of public battle with the paparazzi. And so I saw an opportunity to make a pretty funny joke about it. And I have been in audiences that clapped at that moment, and that made me so happy.
I laughed.
I'm probably starting another round of trouble with them by doing this.
You know what? It's completely okay. No, because you said you appreciate that that it's worked. You are.
I said to them, I'm never making it. As I was debating one of these guys, he said, it's not illegal. And I said, you're absolutely right. And I'm not appealing to your sense of legality. I'm appealing to your sense of humanity.
Yeah.
It's not illegal for me to use my dining room table as a bathroom. That's not illegal. But that does not mean I should do that.
Right?
Yeah. There's a million things that are legal that one should probably avoid.
I like that as an argument just in general. Look.
Sure.
Look.
You know what else is legal?
No.
Using my table is a commode.
There you go. Next time I'm arguing with my parents, that's just going to be, listen, you guys, you are lucky.
Yeah.
That looks damn comfortable.
But you know, you're supposed to, it's all like 101 stuff. You're supposed to write what you know. You have to write the stuff that annoys you. I also don't like people with selfie sticks. I don't know why. I'm sure that's alienating me to the younger generation.
No, you're all right.
But I just thought, if there's anyone we can mow down in a scene, someone with a selfie stick, I feel okay about that.
Which also got me.
Yeah.
That was another one. So, that's another one that
so
was
let's,
just...
Let's ask the money question here.
Yeah.
I can't wait to find out what it is.
No. Is there going to be a Chips 2?
Well, I will know that the movie comes out March 24th, and I'll probably know that midday March 24th.
Right.
I would like nothing more than to do a bunch of them. I would like to pass the Fast and Furious franchise in like 2030.
Ooh.
Like I'd like to.
So now we're talking about
13.
Flying vehicles.
Right.
No. I refuse to ever go CG. That's my promise.
Okay.
To you.
Oh, good.
We'll
Thank
never
you.
Go. Yeah. Because there's
oh, I'll
nothing
I'll
in
shake
that
your
movie.
Hand on that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There's nothing in Chips. There's not a single stunt that's CG. There is a bike swap at one point, digitally done, but there is a real motorcycle flying through the air in real life, and the physics are correct. You know, so you
yeah.
That, but that's it. So yeah,
it makes it so much more exciting, and that's really the thing. Something that I struggle with, even you know, my friends, my husband, they love superhero movies,
right?
And I like them.
Sure,
I like them, and I can definitely get into it. My problem is, I. Obviously, a Spider-Man can't be a Spider-Man doing Spider-Man things.
Right.
But I would really rather he do less. So that it didn't look so much like this little thing they've drawn has flying around. And then I also can't take seriously the fight scenes because they don't look like fight scenes to me. And
well, back to anthropology, right? A part of our brain that is most evolved, that we've spent the most amount of energy developing, is our depth perception, our ability to predict where an object's going. Because we are primates and we used to brachiate, meaning we would go from vine to vine and swing through the jungle, the amount of depth perception and ability to predict where things are going to land, it's so overdeveloped in a primate that when you're watching it, no matter how good the computer gets at recreating something that looks the same, they can't get the physics right. Your body knows on like a cellular level that, oh, that wouldn't have flown that way, or that wouldn't have landed that way, or this kick would not come that way. So you're aware of it. No matter how good it looks, you can feel it that it's not correct because the physics are just too hard to replicate.
Yeah. In other words, don't show Spider-Man to a bunch of gorillas.
They'll be bored out of their mind. Yeah. They'll know they're watching a video game. Yeah.
Remember, you heard it here, folks.
Right.
But
There's a great – I'm not against the technology.
No,
and
of course
as I
not.
Say, those movies are great. But I'm emotionally unplugged a bit. There's something about it. And it's why I also like driving in scenes or riding the motorcycle because there's something about seeing the guy really in the situation.
Absolutely. And that's part of what's so not only fun but so exciting about watching Chips.
Right.
Because those riding scenes,
and
those driving scenes.
I mean,
you can tell they're real. There's a tangible, palpable reality to them.
Yeah. And there's one.
By the way, there's also a tangible, palpable reality to the cityscape of the future in Idiocracy. So let's not rule out
the possibilities
of CG.
Well, I was going to say, where I like it most is like what they can do with a period piece movie, they can do. Like there's the environments
create
they can
world,
create are
yeah.
amazing. And, yeah. and as long as they stay static, I don't even notice them. You know?
Yeah.
It's just when things start moving where it gets a little dicey for me.
Yeah.
But to the hit and run point, there's two different stunts in Hit and Run where there's one, you wouldn't remember it, but the camera car is looking backwards at the road and it's just an empty road. And then all of a sudden, Kristen and I come sliding sideways out onto the road and then past the camera car, right? Uh-huh. And it's all very, very high speed. And I watched playback on that and I was like, I did it. You've never seen the two lead actors actually in the car fly off of another roadside. You know, that was the step where I was just like, even though our stuff wasn't as exciting and we didn't get to blow up as much stuff as you'd see in a big movie, you don't get to see the actors do something like that. And that's worth something.
That was your Hal Needham moment?
Yes, yes. Okay. That was my Hal Needham.
Have you taught her some stunt?
She's a terrible driver. She's the most wonderful person in the world, and she's a terrible driver.
She has to have flaws, man.
Absolutely.
She's got to have at least one.
That's her Achilles.
That's it.
Okay. Is that we All replace right. bumpers about every 3 months on her cars.
But like, is there any stuff that you've tried to teach her?
No.
I
early on realized that wasn't a concern of hers, nor was I going to convince her to be a All concern. Right.
And your kids.
Can I say one more movie I loved?
Because yes.
I left it out. My favorite drama of all time is Michael Mann's first movie, Thief. Do you remember
that's
that
a good movie?
Yeah,
that's a hard-edged movie.
It really is. It's hardcore, and I think
James Caan, right?
James Caan, Belushi. Basically, Heat is a remake of Thief. It's almost the identical movie.
Yeah.
But I think why I liked it is much like I realized watching. Raising Arizona, that something was happening visually that was contributing. That movie Thief was the first movie I realized like what music does to a movie, you mm-hmm. know. And that whole movie is scored by Tangerine Dream, mm-hmm. so it's like super surreal and moody. Mm-hmm. And that was the first movie I was like, oh, I just love this music. Like the music would start, and that movie I probably watched tied with Smokey and the Bandit. I just can't get enough of that movie.
Wow.
And it's the music.
I haven't revisited that in a long time.
It's so good. It's so, so good.
Have you shown your kids yet?
What?
Smokey or...
Oh, well, my daughter turns 4 in a couple of weeks.
Oh, no, I know. It's always...
It's interesting. You know what she does do? So today, as this movie gets finished and I'm approving like electronic press kit clips and stuff, mm-hmm. I'll get sent like 45 clips that I have to go through. And she'll sit next to me and watch them. And like I'll know what clip it is. And I'll go, okay, Daddy's in a hospital in this scene. But I was never in the hospital. Remember,
right.
You visited that day and we had donuts that day. You remember? Yeah, yeah. Okay. And then we watch it. And then if, as long as I set it up that
yeah.
way,
yeah, yeah.
She can watch it and like
yeah.
get a bang out of it. But, you know, they're walking around the city now and there's Chips billboards everywhere. So the
yeah.
two-year-old is like – I like him. She just likes the guy on the poster. I'm not even positive she's connecting that it's me. Yeah.
Oh, so now
at least she likes it.
Yeah,
I mean, she could be walking around going,
we should get a strong 2-year-old turnout.
Hate it.
It's an underserved demo.
Right. Yes, the 2-year-old.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait, no. One of your movies can be Baby Chips.
Ooh, you're right.
Baby
like
Chips
15.
Yeah.
Could be
baby chips.
Absolutely.
And you just have little kids
as
on those, you know, like three-wheelers.
Transition into the little rascal motorized wheelchairs.
I'm totally okay with that. I think that, it can only end well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It can only end well.
But, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you.
No, you.
No,
I
boys,
insist.
Boys,
I've been the airbag.
Boys.
No, because I'm one of us to say goodbye. But if you have something interesting to say, I don't want to cut you off.
You know what it is? I could feel you were going to say goodbye. I wanted to be respectful of that. It's very flattering that you had me on.
We're so glad to have you here.
There's a stand-up comedian named...
Doug Benson.
Doug Benson.
We know Doug.
Yes. Yeah, so I played the Leonard Maltin game mm-hmm. with Doug Benson, mm-hmm. which is really fun. But on the ride here, I was trying to remember the mechanics of it because it's been 5 years since I did. But I think he reads your review of a movie, and then you have to guess.
He gives you hints of the review.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the rating.
Jaw-dropping.
And then you have to
horrendous.
Guess from the cast list from the bottom up.
Oh, yes.
And that's how
you bid on how many names you'll need,
yes.
but from the bottom up.
Yes, that is such a fun game.
And I am the world's worst
player. He's the worst player.
Are you?
Yes.
He's the worst player.
My mind won't sort the information that
Oh, yeah,
way.
He's uh-huh. he's been on with Doug a bunch of times.
Oh, really?
I'm terrible at it.
And, yeah.
It's a joke. I'm
Interesting.
Terrible at it.
Yeah. That's great.
And our friend Sam Levine is one of the best at it.
Uh-huh.
And so is John Hamm. There's some really random people who are fantastic at the game.
People have that kind of memory
yeah.
for actors or they don't. I don't have it, and it's a detriment to me.
I think you're all right.
You have other strengths.
Yeah, I think you're doing okay.
I can ride wheelies on motorcycles.
You sure can.
Yeah.
I will tell you, you thanked us, but when the email came through from the lovely folks at Warner Brothers asking if you could come on the show,
yeah.
I lost my mind. I was so excited.
Oh, good.
And my dad's immediate response was, oh, my God, I have so many questions about Hit and Run because I read all of these interviews and I thought it was so fascinating how he did this and how he did that. He was giddy.
Oh, that's
he was legitimately
so
giddy.
Happy.
And we're so happy that we could have you on today.
I will come back.
And all right, anytime.
Come back chips 2 through 13.
All right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We'll be here.
Okay.
We'll be right here. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Where do people follow you?
Oh, that's great. Twitter, I think my thing is at Dax Shepherd 1.
Yes.
And then on Instagram, I think it's at Dax Shepherd. It'll be the one with a lot of followers.
You know, I was looking up your name, and I looked up that it's in fact you're named after a Harold Robbins character. People may not remember that name. He was a big best-selling author.
Yeah, kind of
The Carpetbaggers was his biggest title, I think,
yes.
that became a movie. And then he made one called The Adventurers, and there's
yeah.
a character named Dax Shepherd in that film.
Well, not Shepherd, but Dax.
Dax, yes.
Yeah, we stole the Shepherd part from my dad.
That's true.
So you and my mother are the same age, mm-hmm. and she read that book when she was pregnant with me. Had you read any of those books?
No.
So you're saying I could have been named Dax?
You could have been.
If only.
I've only met first of all, I had never met a Dax until I got on TV and people at restaurants, some people would know my name. And so I've since met like a couple dozen Daxes and all of them are named after that book.
How interesting.
And it's actually the character's initials. His name was like DeSavius Averia Xavier or something. And then they called him Dax throughout the movie. Yeah. Which they made a movie.
And they made a movie.
And I have the original posters for
it. Oh, good. Good for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Good
a good friend of mine bought those for me, and they hang in our home.
That's well,
good.
So another movie connection.
Yes.
A lifelong movie connection.
Yes, from inception.
Right from the start, from the get-go. anyway, thanks again for being here. Tune in again next week, and we'll have someone else I don't know if we can say equally interesting.
Probably.
But somebody who aspires to be equally interesting. Right. How about that? Effort counts.
I can't wait for you to have Tom Cruise on next week and tell him what the high water mark is.
We'll tell him how to do stunts properly.
That's what it'll be. Anything's possible.
Right.
You can find me at Leonard Maltin on Twitter, and please drop in at my website sometime, leonardmaltin.com. And until next week, we say goodbye, adieu, and see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.